When you shuffle off this mortal coil, what will you leave behind? I'm not trying to get into a big existential debate about your legacy. I'm talking numbers today. When you pass on, what kind of assets will you leave and who's getting them? Maybe you've handed over your inheritance early, you help your kids out with a house deposit, or you've paid for their uni or your grandkids' schooling. Anyway, I'm asking because financial expert David Kosh has written an article where he says boomers are putting a good retirement at risk to give their adult kids money. Kosh argues that outside of a stable upbringing and a good education, you don't really owe your kids anything. But I also want to hear what ethicist Patrick Stokes thinks. He joins me fortnightly for our philosophy segment I've called Ask Aristotle. Pat, welcome, welcome.
How's it going, Tegan?
Good, good, good. Maybe if you're David Kosh and presumably rolling in it, you can afford to be choosy about where you put your money.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you could say that, you know, that's exactly the person who shouldn't be choosy for that reason. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. He's sort of setting up, in the way he says it, he sets up these two kind of competing virtues, if you like, of generosity on the one hand, helping your kids out, and prudence on the other hand, right? The virtue of actually kind of making sure that you have enough to live on, that you're not going to run into any trouble. Prudence being a kind of a virtue of self-interest, so to speak. But yeah, he's just playing those two things off against each other and maybe suggesting people aren't getting the balance right, which may just mean not getting the balance the way he would put the balance.
Yeah, interesting. Well, there is a sort of sense of... there's definitely a cultural sense that you're going to leave something behind to your heirs when you pass on. Where does that come from?
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, we kind of have to. You know, when you die, you leave a bunch of stuff lying around. And the question of what happens to that stuff has to have some sort of framework around it. And then if that framework exists for a very long time, people come to build up expectations around it or a sense of propriety around it. As I say, really, these are just mechanisms for working out what to do with things that are left behind. If you've ever had a relative die and leave an entire shed full of stuff, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? Which is exactly what I'm planning to leave my kids. So, you know, good luck, girls. I mean, there's this idea that, you know, these things have to be distributed. And so over time, we can build up the idea that, well, that means that I'm somehow entitled to it, or it's mine, or it's mine in waiting, and I'll get it when, you know, whoever the relative is dies or whatever. But of course, all that stuff is ultimately kind of contingent because people can really do what they want with it within certain kind of legal parameters.
What do we as parents owe our kids past the age of, I don't know, let's say 18, even though that feels like a complete fiction these days?
Well, complete fiction, I don't know if you saw during the week too, or just earlier this week, there was this study that found that in terms of our brain development, the adolescent period of development appears to be from roughly puberty to our late 20s, early 30s.
32. Now,
Yeah, it doesn't mean you're actually an adolescent into your 20s, but it does mean you're still an adult, but it does... you know, remind us that the idea that something magically happens and you change into a completely fully formed, responsible human being on your 18th birthday just isn't how these things work. But I actually think that the real issue there is the concept of owing, you know, what we owe our kids. I don't know that's the right framework. I think it's more that as a parent, you have a certain kind of loving regard that is, you know, due to your kids, or that, you know, that it's part of what it is to be a parent is to give them a kind of loving regard that serves their best interests. And the question is just how do you serve your child's best interests and how do you do that at different ages? And just as what serves your child's best interest at the age of one is going to be different to what serves their interests at 15, when they need greater independence and they need, you know, to be able to do more things for themselves, it will be different when they're adults as well. But that doesn't mean that you might not be called upon to serve their interests in a way that might be antithetical to your own.
I do think there is we've talked a lot about it on Life Matters over the course of the last few years about I guess an unfair distribution of wealth, that there's a sense that the older generation had it really good and they managed to accrue all of this wealth, and don't they sort of owe it to their younger generation to pass that on. Is there anything to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, on the one hand, certainly older people, sort of boomer type folks, roughly that generation, you know, it's entirely reasonable for younger people to say, and to be honest, they're not necessarily that young, because if you've got boomer parents, you're probably a late Gen X like me, or you're a millennial.
Which means you're in your 40s now. You're grown up.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, even so, they can still say, well, you know, you guys had free university and you could just walk into these jobs that weren't, you couldn't walk into two generations later, and you didn't necessarily need a uni degree to get into these careers and so on. So the game has changed in that sense, and it's entirely reasonable for younger people to say, well, hang on, you lived in a good, you were able to buy a house in a good suburb and you were able to raise a child with one parent temporarily out of the workforce. Why are these things not available to me? Equally, and Kosh makes this point, and it's not an unreasonable point, older folks can turn around and say, well, you've been paying compulsory superannuation your whole life. When you retire, you know, you're going to have a hell of a lot more money to retire in that super fund than I do. And so this is also this interesting thing, right, that you can say, well, step back from that. Temporarily, it all works out. And this is the point that Kosh wants to make, right? You know, they're going to get, the younger folks will get their benefits. They'll just get them when they're older. But there's this thing in philosophy we call the shape of life hypothesis, which means that the welfare value of a life is not just about the sum total of the goods that it contains. The way in which they're arranged over time matters. Mm. So a life of struggle followed by triumph is somehow better than a life of early triumph followed by struggle, even though they've got the same amount of good in them. So you can't just say it's about, oh, well, you'll get your super when you're in your 60s, so you're fine. There's also this whole thing about how certain life goods are arranged across time.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to ethicist Patrick Stokes. It's Ask Aristotle time of the fortnight, and we're talking about what parents owe their kids when it comes to an inheritance. A couple of people, I guess, sort of disagreeing with you a little bit, Pat. One says, as a boomer, I feel I owe what I can leave to my kids because they have a harder time acquiring it than we did. Lorraine says, I'm very conscious of this. Depending on how long I live and how well I am, my kids might not have much left after I pay for aged care. Kids didn't ask to be born. They've given me joy. Yes, I owe them. Another says, I'm thinking of selling all assets. Enjoy the last few years so they won't argue about it. Some of this is like, we can have a philosophical discussion about it. Like, we literally are. That's why we've got you here. Yeah. But it's also a cultural thing, right? Like, there are kind of expectations, shared expectations in this time and place.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I say, there are these cultural norms and narratives around, you know, how these things are going to be distributed when you die. Equally, there's these whole ideas like, okay, I'm going to spend the money so you can't argue. I mean, I find that kind of fascinating too. And it, on one level, it makes a huge amount of sense, right? And there's a lot of people saying that, well, I'm just going to blow the money on whatever I want to and the kids can look after themselves. And it's not entirely unreasonable. But this way of framing it, I mean, some of the anxiety in those messages from callers and things like that, some of the concern about this stuff, all this ends up being framed as a kind of matter of your individual responsibility, as a matter of what, you know, what do I owe to my kids specifically with the money I've got? And that's a legitimate question. It's a question each of us does actually have to face. But there is this thing that can happen that when you frame these things as matters of individual responsibility, or as Kosh has done, a question of individual virtues, of generosity versus prudence, for instance, when you do that, you can lose sight of the systemic issue. You can lose sight of the question of why are we having to have these discussions, you know, and, you know, why am I having to plug certain gaps in the way in which society distributes these goods? Why is it up to me to fix that problem when it should be ultimately a question of a social problem and ultimately a political problem about how certain access to certain goods is made possible for people? So, I mean, in some ways, it's almost like, you know, back in the 70s when, you know, the packaging industry was funding, you know, anti-litter campaigns and tidy down campaigns and things like that, and throwing it back on individuals and saying, you need to pick up after yourself, you need to recycle. And you do, and that's true, but it's also just framing it like that is a way of avoiding the question of, should we as a society be operating like this? Should we be making this much packaging? Should we be making housing this expensive? And so on. And so you've got to be really careful of your framing not distracting from the bigger picture.
That's a really interesting point. So I know that this isn't your patch, but like, are there policy changes or what? How do we as citizens interact with the reality that you've just described in a way that is constructive?
Yeah, because there's only so much you can do, right? But one of the things you can do for your kids, and we may not like this, particularly those of us in midlife and moving, you know, forward from there, who might be actually accruing wealth or might actually be building up property or whatever. It's worth asking ourselves, do we actually really want to have a society in which we benefit like that? Do we want to have a society in which, for instance, we've turned housing into a form of investment vehicle first and practical necessity second? Do we really want to have that? Or should we actually push for certain kinds of changes that might disadvantage us personally, but that leave everyone else better off, right? I'm not saying, you know, go out there and seize the means of production. That's what I'm indoctrinating your kids into while you're not looking in university classrooms. But I'm not really. We can't, as somebody once said, you know, this idea that academics are indoctrinating students into Marxism or whatever, we can't even get them to do the readings, let alone persuade them to change
their... You've been setting Marxist texts for years now and no one's ever picked them up yet.
No, well, yeah, I don't know if we could call... Well, we certainly couldn't call Aristotle a Marxist, so I don't... Yeah, no, I assure you, if we could indoctrinate your kids, we'd probably make them, you know, we'd probably have better university policy because they'd vote differently.
So voting's definitely part of the equation here. Definitely not the chat I thought we were going to be talking about, buying a great big caravan and going on a road trip. But as always, it's a delight speaking to you. Thank you so much, Pat.
Thanks, Tegan.
Patrick Stokes is an associate professor in philosophy at Deakin University. He joins me every fortnight for Ask Aristotle. We unpack ethical dilemmas together. And I'm really enjoying your insights on what you're thinking about when you're looking at your inheritance that you'll be leaving to your next generation. John says, I'm reminded of Oscar Wilde's moving story, The Happy Prince, when I see my friend impoverishing herself to provide material support for her children. They're not demanding of it, but she feels compelled to support them nevertheless, even though she's by no means well off. Excuse me.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music, and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.